everybody, and welcome to The Tea with Crema. My name is Chris. I'll be one of your hosts today, and I'm joined by my best friend, Emma.
Good morning, everyone.
We are super excited today because our episode has a guest here with us. It's also a continuation of a topic that I am oddly, strangely, randomly passionate about. I really don't understand it, but I just have a lot of passion around this topic. And so we're so glad to welcome Issa to continue our discussion on Mormonism. So welcome, Issa.
Hello.
With the sound effects. Okay, I'm getting better. I'm learning. So yes, today is our part two of our Mormonism exploration. And before we begin, we do still have our tea checks. So starting with that, Emma, what tea did you bring today?
Today, I have an iced tea because you know what it is in Japan? Hot.
Humid. Muggy.
Everything that is awful about Texas times 100 in Japan. So that's my life now. So I'm drinking an English tea. But it's an English lemon tea. So, oishikatta desu. What are you drinking today, Chris?
Today, I have a tea from a brand that I've actually come to really enjoy. It's actually from Independence Coffee Company. They make my favorite tea, which is the Texas Dirty Chai. Honestly, I just stumbled upon it on a Houston ATV one time. Delicious. Still 6 out of 5 stars. Definitely recommend that tea. But they have other teas. And so this time I have a Irish Breakfast Top of the Morning Tea, which is a classic rich full body tea blend. Just very black tea leaves, very morning, very that. There were no additional extra flavors or notes. It was truly just like a morning black tea. And so I did end up adding a little bit of vanilla to it myself, but it was a strong black tea. So it did the job for the most part. And what about you, Issa? What tea did you bring today?
You guys are so fancy with your teas. I just have a regular old oolong tea with lemon. It's also hot here, so I don't know if hot tea was the greatest choice. But yeah, here it is.
It's a good move. Actually, you're supposed to be drinking warm beverages when it's warm outside and cold beverages when it's cold outside. It's very opposite because your body's equilibrium. So you did the right thing.
Thank you.
Whoever wrote that has clearly never been to Texas because...
Not part. Or Utah. Utah's also pretty awful during the summer.
I'm so excited to visit all of these places during the summer just to like remind everyone that Texas still is the actual worst. Because Emma talks about Japan and like it's really bad in the summer and I just cannot wait to show up and be like, Emma, what are you talking about? Like, honestly, this is amazing.
Please, please come. Please do.
Don't come here. It's dry here. It's hot and dry.
And that is different. I don't know anything about that. So that would be an experience. But we are, again, very excited to continue our exploration of the Mormon religion series. Honestly, I really don't know why I love learning about Mormonism. I just do. It just sparks an interest that I haven't quite been able to extinguish. And it all started with watching a show over the summer about drag queens going across the country, and very, very, very often they would end up in Mormon communities talking to queer individuals and their experiences. I learned a lot about Mormonism, kind of like snippy snips from here and there. And so our first episode on just like Mormonism in general was with Emma's sister, Suko, where we got a history, a background, a general overview. And so today we're really going to be diving into like the queer experience of Mormonism, because again, that was like the meat of the show. That's also a big part of my existence as a human being. And so that is kind of our big, big, big focus. And so first and foremost, Issa, thank you so much for joining us today and just like really being an active participant in my low-key interrogation.
Of course. Anytime, so excited to be here and be interrogated.
Should I do a brief bio of Issa? Sorry, I feel like that's like she's my cousin.
Correction, you're my auntie. She's okay. My aunt, just for everybody.
Yes, I am. That is true. Okay, yeah, because I feel like we're talking about like, yeah, let's talk about, you know, the queer experience. And then we're like, why did we bring this person on? So Issa is a queer Pacifica woman who was born in Hawaii, and she currently resides in West Valley City, Utah. She's been in West Valley for many, many years, and she's currently working on her marriage and family bachelor's, and she coaches high school and club volleyball, and she's currently on the leadership of the Nuanua Collective, which is a space created specifically for Pacifica LGBTQIA plus and QTP BIPOC. So Issa is actually, yes, she's my niece. My dad and yes, that as well. We're actually the same age. She's actually older than me by 2 months.
Okay. Didn't need to tell them. That's okay.
My dad and Issa's grandma are siblings. Issa's grandma's towards the top of the siblings, and my dad is one of the younger siblings. So her dad and I are first cousins. So Issa is my second cousin, but because we were so close in age, we were raised like first cousins. And yeah, we're just very excited to have Issa to our show. She is, again, expressing her experiences and her lived experiences. Yeah, I just don't want everyone to be like, oh, this is the expert, and like, she's our token. Yes, she's our token queer person. So let's you know, bring her on and everything like that. Although you are an expert in your lived experience and an expert in, I think, the, you know, the QTB BIPOC community in Utah and everything. So that's kind of where we're going to from there. Okay, now Chris, you may take over the interrogation. Sorry about that.
Well, thank you so much for a thorough background into the family thing. Also, fun fact, I love reading that, like, both you and Emma always write about being born and raised in Hawaii, but not being Hawaiian. Super important caveat I didn't know anything about until I met Emma. So,
yep, that part.
Random fun fact. Apparently, those are different things. I don't know. I guess it's
very.
I don't know. Texas is different. We just learn stuff as differently. So, our first kind of start is just like a brief introduction into what your connection is to. Is it the Mormon religion? Is it Mormonism? What do I?
I think all of the above is the right answer. I don't know if there is a right answer, honestly. My connection, besides, you know, our islands being colonized by the church. Just kidding. Not really. Yeah, but not really kidding. I grew up in the LDS church, you could say, I guess. From a super young age, we were kind of, I'm not going to say forced, but I'm going to say forced to go to church every Sunday. Go to the church activities, all that good stuff, until I decided not to go anymore, I guess. Yeah. My parents are members, but they're inactive. My dad's side is very Southern Baptist. My grandmother married a white man, of course, so they're Baptist. He did not convert, even though my grandma tried to convert him. And then my mom's side also converted from a Christian church in Samoa, so yeah. They took us, all of us.
Southern Baptists are not an easy group of people to try to convert.
Yeah.
And not just Southern Baptists, but like Southern Baptists from Florida, right?
Yes. Yep.
That was an uphill battle from start.
Was like a white man. Like, not like a white man from Utah. Like, that's, I think, different from a white man from Florida.
A Duck Dynasty, if you will.
We'll probably do an exploration of, like, Southern Baptism in the U.S. maybe at some point, because, that's a journey, but wow, so you're coming from a generally pretty religious family, because again, Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day Saints, I'm getting it, and then Southern Baptist on the other side, like, that's a lot of religion.
Yeah, it is. A lot of different religions also, so it's been interesting to look into each of them and kind of learn the differences. Mm-hmm.
So then I guess at this point, would you consider yourself a practicing religious person of either, both? Can you be both? Are you neither? Where have we kind of landed today?
For the sake of my cheaper tuition, because I do go to BYU, I'm going to say yes. But in reality, no. I think I'm more spiritual than I am religious right now.
That's valid.
That checks out. What's BYU?
Brigham Young University.
Yeah.
It's the Mormon University.
Isn't that like, I was about to say, isn't that the Mormon church?
And because she goes to the one in Utah, that's like that's like the Harvard of Mormon colleges. You're laughing, but it's true.
I'm not. I am sure it's true. Yes, I'm laughing.
It's like
not a good time.
Chris, it's like the UT of Mormonism. And then you have the BYU in Hawaii, and that's like the UC Riverside of Mormonism. And then you have the one in Idaho, and it's Idaho. So
first of all,
it's just as bad as Utah.
A far more similar experience to going to Texas A&M, because no, that's I don't want to use the word like culty, but
a little bit. Actually, yes, I would say A&M and Provo are probably very close to each other in terms of its like passion from the students.
I'm just saying, you know, and a very particular there are Texas community universities that are a little, you know, they exist, but it's not UT. I could tell you that much. Not necessarily because like I'm ride or die for UT, but I think that in and of itself is what makes me a Longhorn. Versus if I were an Aggie, that would not be my statement.
That's true.
I'm just saying, that is a wild digression, unrelated to really anything. But, you know, universities and cultures, they're out here just doing things to people. So
it's also very interesting with Mormonism, because like we were talking about in the previous episode about, you know, migration patterns. So like, for example, Issa is getting a cheaper tuition because she was baptized in the church. So you're also able to get certain perks. And when you look at kind of the breakdown of the Brigham Young University system, the tuition is significantly cheaper for members than it is for non-members.
Are we talking like out-of-state, in-state difference, or?
I don't think state matters. I think it's just if you're a member or if you're not.
It's a, because it's a private institution. So I guess I would like compare it most to like if you were in-state versus out-of-state.
Yeah. I know it's a private institution, but I do know that like, a student who's going to a state university and they are considered out of state is paying like twice as much for the same experience. Sometimes, most of the time.
According to their website, it does say that an LDS member, it's almost, half the price than a non-LDS member.
I'm going to say it's like a fourth. They're capping over there. It's probably a fourth of what everyone else pays.
Does that mean that you are presently an LDS member?
Yeah, so once you're baptized, they keep kind of like a record of you in your life. Every time you like move wards or move states, you're a member until you're not a member. Countries. So you're basically a member until you're not. So you could get like kicked out of the church for certain reasons. Like for me being a part of the LGBTQIA+ community, I could be kicked out. They won't admit that, but I could be. So it gets into kind of like,
do they not admit that because it's the 21st century?
Yeah, they've gone from being completely against it in the doctrine to kind of like, you can be a part of that community as long as you're not like acting on it. So as long as you don't see it and you're not forwardly putting yourself out there, we're just going to not pay attention to it. Kind of like our culture does.
Not you putting in the connections between our culture and our culture of colonization as well. I would say that there's definite deep ties between, right, like being Tongan, Samoan, and like the, you know, the LGBTQ connection, right? Like our people had their genders and they had, you know, there was deep respect for our Leyte sisters and I guess for Samoans, Fafafine, and for Hawaiian, Mahu, and stuff like that. And so there's all of these connections, yet when the religions came over, they definitely, it was otherworldly to them. So they made sure that they could like stamp that out, and it was awful, but yeah, definite connections.
I would say it's even like, it's not a perfect parallel, but even in the sense of like living in a state like, you know, Texas, it's a weird like dichotomy of just like, I really enjoy Texas, but also I do not have workplace protections in the same kind of like, if I were somehow like out in a weird way that is kind of ambiguous and not super clear and easy to define, then I am not guaranteed workplace protections and could be fired just for like the funsies of it. But like, we don't say that.
Yeah.
But like, it could happen. And has happened. And in fact, it happened pretty close to the start of my career and was definitely one of those things that I think as an educator has restricted my ability to show up as the best advocate or ally for some of my students sometimes, because it's hard some when it's your life and your experience on the line, I guess, you know, to really try to advocate for other individuals of the same community. And that's definitely that moment where you're like, no, I kind of have to really phone it into the allies who do not have that same skin in the game and just have to rely on, I guess, the generosity, the consideration, the whatever you want to call it, of individuals who are not of the community, who don't have that same type of, I don't want to say life or death, but like,
it kind of is.
In a world where like, if I don't have money, I can't pay for food, it low-key kind of is, yeah. And so it's not, again, not a perfect parallel, but like I've just hearing you describe it, it's very similar to that sense of like, I mean, like, yeah, but like, no, but like, yeah, but like, no. And it's so long as you toe the acceptability line, then it's a fine lived experience. And so I guess, I don't know, I guess kind of trying to figure out like, where is that line then? And then where do you try to figure out your personal line and then the church's personal line? And is it always a clear cut thing, or do you just feel like you take it day by day?
Yes. I think day by day is the easiest because I'm an overthinker. So I tend to like overwhelm myself with even coming on the podcast today. I was like, what if they do listen to this? Like, what if someone does send it to them? Because then there goes my education and that's like taking away from my livelihood too. So yeah, definitely taking it in smaller bits makes it a lot easier. Trying to fit yourself into this box, but also be outside of it and be yourself too. Not easy. Oof.
I just think like culturally as well, right? Like, yeah, because we're women of a certain age, like, and Mormons, yeah, marry really young typically, just like they're probably questioning like, okay, why isn't she married yet? Like, why does she want to continue her education with no family? So I think just like hierarchically, Chris, like in terms of what a, like how the church runs. So each church is set into wards. So within one building, you have several wards that meet. The wards are set up by different districts. So very similar to like redlining. They will try to push out the brown communities. They don't say that, but they will. So the different wards are typically by community. So there's like Tongan speaking wards, and the entire church program and service is led in Tongan. And then you have the English speaking wards, and you have Spanish speaking wards, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. From that, over each ward, there's a leader who's the bishop. The bishop is appointed by God or by the stake president in this case. The bishop reports to the stake president. The stake president is the leader over all of the wards in his not region, but more like city-ish. And then above the stake president, I'm sure there's others. And then at the top is the prophet. The prophet, again, is appointed by whomever, and he comes in and he's the leader over all of the churches. So in Issa's case, it's like she's meeting the manager and the district manager every single year to make sure that she can renew her tuition in order to continue attending school. And in those meetings, she has to, you know, make agreements and be interviewed about, you know, very personal things. And clearly, you know, they feel very empowered to ask her about her marital status and, you know, yeah, all of those things. Chris's eyeballs are large.
And they can say no. That's the worst part.
There are so many questions here. Because, first of all, how do they have that much time to just be talking to everybody? Is BYU small?
No. It's not at all.
I think for Issa's specific program, though, so remember how we were talking, like, members get a discount. So Issa has an additional discount on top of that.
Yeah.
It's almost like a bridge program, right? Like they have, like, you take all your prereqs, and then after she's done with all her prereqs, then it's a pathway into BYU through their 4-year program. So part of that program, they have them take all of these different classes. It feels a little like a Mormon 101 a little bit. Like, I was hearing some of the classes, yeah, she was taking, and I was like, is that a real class?
Yeah, you have to take religion classes every semester, so it's nuts.
But I mean, the religion classes I get, that's a similarity to religious colleges and institutions.
Right.
Other places, which is no small part of why I was like, nah, about religious institutions. But like, also, I think the thing that like really got me is like a prophet, like, that's no small thing, even, again, not as a religious person, but just like in the general concept of my familiarity with Judeo-Christian religions and practices. To declare oneself as a prophet is no small thing. The Pope does not even declare oneself as a prophet. Those are very different things. And so, I don't know, that part kind of like really stood out to me. I'm just like, a prophet? That's all. Okay. I mean, like, okay, but like, cool. Mormonism. Got it. They got prophets every day.
Side note also, so besides the prophet, because he's at the higher part of the organization, but like bishops and stake presidents all have like regular day jobs on the side. Like, this is like their side hustle is being, they're not paid for it. They're appointed. So it's like a very strict voluntelling. and you're in it for however long. So, like, I mean, many of our uncles have been bishops, Issa's great uncles. So we out here just in middle management.
And that's where we'll stay, because every prophet has been what, right?
White.
White.
Well, that makes sense, just based on the whole Lamanite debacle that we had in the last episode about this whole thing of just like, what in the world? I still don't understand how you convince a whole community of brown people to join a religion where Lamanite is even a concept. Like, I can't wrap my head around how that happens actively. It's one thing to be, I get to have a underground queer community. I get that. That's not something that, you know, you really understand until after you're born and it happens later in your life when you start to put pieces together, at least for me and a lot of the individuals that I've learned through time and experience. It's just, it's a whole thing. But like, no, to be like born very melanated and to know very plainly that this religion is not about your life immediately, but then to still be able to like, I don't get it. I truly cannot understand how it happened.
I would say fear, false promises. I mean, if you don't follow us, you guys are going to hell. Let's take away all your traditions and just kind of cut you guys off. I don't know. There's so many things, but just, for me, those are the two that stick out.
Which I will say is not a unique feature of Mormonism. Again, Christianity is as prevalent as it is through no peaceful journey of its own. But it's one of those things that I'm still wrapping my head around, because I don't, in all of these religions, I just don't quite understand like how you get individuals to like be about things that are actively against their own self-interest. Like, I don't understand. Like, that is like human survival 101 is survive. Literally, it's survival. And so trying to figure out like how all of these pieces work together. And so one common thread that I saw is that as queer individuals within the church, it also put a really significant strain on like family relationships.
We're getting into it.
And I think no small part of it is because like, and even in, you know, religions and experiences that I've had in and of myself of just having family members come at me from this religious perspective of just like, oh, well, you know, like we love you as a person, but, you know, also as a religious individual, want to kind of preface with like, did you know that you are, you know, going to hell because of this part of your life? And so I guess part of that is just like, is that same pressure present in the Mormon religion or in your experiences of like, people are like, we love you, but like not you, just like parts of you kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. It's been probably the hardest part about coming out and being a part of the church when I was a lot younger, when I was a lot more active and trying to figure that part of my life out. There's a process in the church where you get sealed to your family. So it's kind of like you go with your family into the temple. They say some stuff to you. You guys are bonded together, like in this life and the afterlife type of thing. I, at the time, was very out. I had a lot of piercings. I drank, like I smoked. I did a lot of stuff I wasn't supposed to do within our religion. But my family was really like pushing for it and my parents really wanted it. So I was like, you know what? Let me try to push those parts of myself to the side for like a few months. Like, to me, that was just like, let me give them the best that I can give them right now and go through this with them so that they can have that peace of mind for themselves. Because to me, it's like, I already know where I'm going in this religion. Like, I know where my place is here. And I had my dad's, I've never talked about this either, so this is the first time. My dad's sisters, who are very strong in the church, their husbands are a part of kind of like the council under the bishop. They have been since I was younger, also very strong members. They kind of came at me the night before my family's going to get sealed in the temple. And it got to the point where they were just like, are you worthy enough to do this? Like, you know, you like girls, you can say it, like, you know that you shouldn't be going through with this. Just kind of like making it super harder for me than it needed to be. Like, it was already hard, but they just wanted to make sure, like, you know, right? Like, this doesn't mean anything for you. Like, you know, you're not supposed to be doing this, right? And it got to the point where we got into an altercation. Like, I had to run away from them, and it got physical. Like, I got physically hurt at the end of it. Like, that's how serious it was to them. So that's just one of many experiences that I've had to kind of just see that people do. They love me for who I am, but not like what I come with. It's kind of being tolerated more than accepted. So it's been a, yeah.
Goodness. I just, the aggression that comes with it.
Yeah.
That's another, like, I just, oh. It's one thing to, like, know or see the things from, like, random individuals on a TV show, but then to, like, hear that these are not dramatizations of people's lived experiences. Like, this does really happen to individuals. And I think, for me in particular, have felt lucky in that I've not had aggressive experiences, either from my own family or from individuals in general, even coming from a place like Texas. But that's not to say that I wander the world naively. In the same kind of way that you've mentioned, like, turning it off and on and knowing when and where and the places for those things. Like, I learned how to navigate those spaces pretty quickly and how to figure out that experience. And then to know that, like, I had a different coming of age story and experience. It's not the same thing of, you know, just like all of the cute little going to prom and doing all the fun things that, like, all of your peers get to do without any issues, and just, like, always kind of having to wonder about, like, is it going to be okay? Am I going to be not even just happy, but just, like, physically okay?
Yeah, safe for sure. Yeah, I've had to go to dances with, like, people I was dating. Like, oh no, that's just my best friend. We would never do that, like, for the safety reason. Like, we know if we come across someone, like, they will. You know that's wrong, right? Utah's not. Oh, just let them be. I'm going to look you down. You guys are disgusting. You guys know that, right?
Just definitely a little bit different than, again, Texas, where it's like, again, there are places where that takes place. And there, I have learned, there are places where you turn it off and you just do your best. And even if your best is just like standing in a corner and not saying anything to anyone, you do that. But again, I think in part, I've not had those experiences because I've learned how to just say, whoop, and you just put it in a box until later.
Yeah. See, and I struggled with that when I was younger because I was very, my grandma is a very headstrong woman and I'm named after her. So I think I kind of like took that from her where I was like, and I'm gay and I don't care. And I'm going to be gay in these spaces until I got like a little bit older and learned. Because I think there was one time I was walking with someone and it was just a friend too, but it looked like maybe we could have been together, and like, someone drove by and was like, you guys are disgusting and you should go hang yourself. Like, that's the reality of it, kind of. It's just like, we really can't really go anywhere and be safe and just be us. It's I gotta turn it off.
There has to be that experience that, I guess, maturity, unfortunately, comes into play at some point because of the fact that I remember being very similar and lucky enough to live in probably the most liberal part of Texas at the time. So not always having the same pressures of living in a more conservative community at that rebellious stage in my life. But I know that there was a point where I was like, I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm going to do what I'm going to do because it's what is true for me. And then again, very similar where you get older and you're like, actually, like, nah, I got like bills to pay and a life to live. And just like, there's a certain point where you realize that, like, yes, I want to live in my truth, but like also kind of like before that, like, I just kind of want to live.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but like, you have to really interrogate, like, where's my line of, like, again, as someone who's living in the experience, where do I draw my line? And then where do I kind of like really hope and pray and nudge and wink at an ally to come in clutch and to help out in that moment of just like, I really hope that like when push comes to shove, like, it's someone who's not me, who doesn't have that same type of like, you're not going to get fired. You have a husband and two kids and they, you know, it'll be fine for you if you stand up and say, like, this is not right. Whereas, like, for me, not only will it be not all right, but could lose my job. Or, in some very, very extreme, but not too unrealistic cases, my life.
Yeah. Were you guys sealed in the temple, Emma?
Yeah, we were sealed. So, yeah, there's even different types of sealings, right? So, like, when Issa was sealed to her family, she was already born. But because my parents were more married in the church, I didn't have like a entirely like different like ceremony for the sealing and everything. Because once you're married, then you're sealed for time and all eternity. So I didn't have to go through that experience or that process, which is also why through the sealing process, women can't remarry because they're sealed to their first husbands. But men can remarry. So when they go to heaven, and it's a whole thing, right? Because you're sealed, like your first wife is sealed to you, and all subsequent wives are sealed to you as well. So when our grandma, Issa's great grandma, passed away, everyone, like, it was a really sad day, obviously, because she raised all of us, but it was also like, so
are they gonna go up there and fight?
Is anyone gonna yeah, is so who's gonna talk about where grandma Moala's going? Yeah. Because, you know, she's up, he's up there, okay, right now, so with grandma Emma, so
are they gonna battle it out?
How
are they
this
gonna
work?
Hang out together?
We don't know exactly the logistics of what happens when you die, but that was one of the lightening moments, lighthearted moments.
You're blowing Chris's mind.
Religion in general, it's not uniquely Mormonism, I promise. It just, religions in general, I will never cease to be amazed by.
But I think the thing I'm the most amazed by is because, like, with my whole chest, for a very large portion of my life, like, was very ride or die and did not see that it was odd, right? Like, what do you mean you and your family aren't going to... What do you mean there's not three levels of heaven? Like, I remember when my dad, like, he was inactive first, and then he, like, fully left the church. And then essentially, like, my mom and I both left the church as well. Like, I was kicking and screaming. And I remember, like, getting into a really big argument with my dad. And I'm not a shouter at my dad. Like, I don't yell at my dad just because my dad scares me. And I remember yelling at him, like, fully with my whole chest, saying, "You will never be able to be sealed. Like, you won't be able to see me get married in a temple if you make me leave. I am not leaving the church." And my dad's like, "You are brainwashed."
And I was like, "And we were."
And I was like, "Don't you want to go to the temple with me?" And he was like, "Not at all."
He was so fake.
Not even a little bit. I just...
Yeah.
It's a fine line. And I don't understand where it is. I still haven't found it. I don't know. One of these is probably maybe true. But I guess we won't know until the end.
Yep.
And all the non-Mormons are going to be very sad.
Could you imagine? Although it sounds like, based on, like, what I'm hearing, some of the Mormons will probably be sad. A lot of the Mormons will also probably be sad, so...
Yes, they will also be the lowest level of the level of heaven.
So, I mean, there's that. But I don't... Ugh. There's only so many things that we can ask about the queer experience in general before things just get very sad for individuals who just don't understand the lived experience, and especially the coming-of-age time, which is just... It sounds like you had additional pressures than just coming of age in a society that's not about that life, but then, like, within a culture that is aggressively not about that life, additionally. It's okay, guys. We're not going to remind you of all of the terrible things that all of your queer friends had to go through growing up.
Yeah. No, we are.
But actually, maybe we should. We
actually are.
But you know what?
This is my first reason why.
This might be, like, part two of the Mormon series, but it might be part one of the queer exploration, because I don't think we've had that at the Tea with Grandma at all, really. In no small part, because I probably have not come to terms with any part of that part of my life as it relates to talking to people in public, because again, I could still be fired for it. It's just so frustrating. Okay, that was fun. Any last thoughts that you would like to share with us, Issa?
No.
In case anyone's wondering, this is a heavily edited episode because there's money on the line.
Because we need her to get her check. We need her to get her education. Well, you know what? We'll actually release the unedited version once Issa graduates, like on graduation day.
When she's ready. So please be looking forward to that. Just like, what's it really like for the queer individuals? TLDR, it's not great. So there's that. But that means now it is time for our...
Rapid fire question!
All right, so Emma, take it away. What is our first rapid fire question of the day?
La pregunta es... What's your favorite word to say out loud? What's your favorite word to say out loud?
That's a great question. I'm saying, huh?
You know what mine isn't? Like? I can't stand that word. Like? Gives me the shudders. I would say I have a real fascination with any word that you can read in the context of an older novel. So, you know, henceforth, forthwith, just like words that are just on the edge of antiquated, but aren't all the way, like, people will generally get them from context, but, like, definitely gives you, like, a side eye of, like, where did you pull this word from?
That's a $10 word.
That's a $10 word. I'm like, actually, in 1943, it was a $2 word. We just don't use it anymore.
And not just a $10, it's like a vintage $10. like a coin collector $10.
It's a $10 piece, okay?
That part. My favorite, as I was asking the question, I had to think about it. I don't think I have a favorite word. I guess I say literally a lot. I'm like, literally. Literally. Literally.
Really emphasize all the syllables.
Yeah. I can say it in so many different ways. But my least favorite word is, I can't even say it because I'm going to throw up. Okay, moving on.
Are you going to say moist?
It's moist.
Oh my gosh, girl.
I just don't like the I just don't like the OIS. I don't like
OIS?
It.
Are there any other words that have it?
Yeah.
Hoist?
Yeah.
What?
What about voice?
No, that's fine.
It's just hoist, moist.
But even like the food that you eat.
Pomegranate?
Oysters. Like.
Oh. Why was I like pomegranate?
Gross. Okay, next. Moving on. Before you trigger everyone else. Issa, what's your question?
What is the biggest learning experience you have?
Oh, that was deep. That's not a rapid fire question.
What's your favorite color then?
I feel like that is a rapid fire question.
No, that is a rapid fire question. No, that's a good one. So what's the I think best conceptually
Emma's just not good at rapid fire questions.
Like, what's your biggest learning experience?
Biggest learning experience. Yeah, as a concept of this segment of our show, I'm not good at it because I also don't give answers rapid fire. That's a lot. Oh god, there's so many. Christopher, you go first.
There's so many. You got a list.
Emma has like a list of things that she's learned from. I just be out here living my best life. I would say one of my biggest learning experiences has been really figuring out how to marry my ideals with real life. Because a lot of times, like, your boy would come in guns a-blazing, yelling at people, being very brash and harsh, and not always as sensitive as I needed to be, and realizing that there is a way to still get things accomplished without like hurting everybody's feelings on the way. So that took some years, but I did eventually get better at it. I wouldn't say I've mastered it, but I have gotten better.
Oh, you know what? After you were like saying, you know, like trying to like your ideals and everything, I think one of my biggest learning experiences was realizing, maybe not even a realization. I feel like in the back of my head, I always realized it, but kind of like, oh, I'm probably going to get canceled for this. So don't like soundbite this anyone, but like how awful Polynesians are, just like culturally in the Pacific Islander realm, like that to me was like such a big learning experience of like, wait, are we the colonizers of the Pacific Islands? You know, like I think I think that was such a big learning experience for me to realize like, yes, you are a marginalized voice and yet you are the people, not the people. I don't even want to generalize the people. The culture alienates Black people, alienates queer people, alienates all of these other marginalized communities. And you're like, bro, how are you gonna be marginalizing while you're marginalized? Like, I don't understand. So I think that to me was like such a big moment and realization and coming to, I guess, terms with like, okay, how do I show up as a better ally? And like, how do I make space for, you know, our BIPOC sisters and our queer family? And how do we do that? Like, and how do we do that? Yeah. So I guess that was one of my biggest learning experiences for sure.
And Issa? That's the tea. Love it. I was thinking about this. I would say dating a Tongan who is very Tongan has been a really big learning experience for me. I am a quarter white, but I think I pull to that side more than anything. We can be honest. our Tongan side kind of shows us stuff when they want to show us stuff.
My Tongan side is, yeah.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
No, attitude. I was going to say, I was like, I think our Tongan side is very selective in our Tonganness. I would say that our Tongan side is more Mormon than we are Tongan. Oh. Does that make sense?
Oh, you're being too loud. Right now.
Sorry.
But yes, being way loud. They're going to get us. Don't tag our family in this. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm tagging all of your aunties. And
tag them. Yeah. No, you're right. Their religion very much comes before our culture does. So in that, we've lost a lot of ourselves. We can say that, especially with the language. Like, it just goes so deep. And then my Samoan side, I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten like closer to that side. So they're slowly teaching us things, but we have to ask them. So being with someone who is Tongan, and she has grown up very Tongan, and they are from a religion that originated in the Tongan Islands and is also very inclusive of the community. Shout out to the Second on Second church here. I mean, there's stuff going on with that right now. But anyways, we're not going to talk about that. It's a different episode. The Methodist Church. Shout out to y'all. Yeah, it's changed my outlook on everything. It's also made me want to learn more and also kind of pushed me into my own views when it comes to the church. I already knew I wasn't a member, but I think it just kind of solidified it, learning more from her in that aspect of our culture. So.
Yes, partners teaching us about life.
Love it.
I do. I love love. It's like, you can come on our love episode next.
We can. Love would love to come. We are open to it. The show.
It's okay. We always have availability on that episode.
Do you guys?
Only because Chris hates being interviewed for that episode. So it's like, it stresses him out that he finds a guest every single time. So come February, you might be getting another DM.
That's okay. And both of our birthdays are in February. There you go.
See? Perfect. It'll be a birthday / love episode.
Yeah, love it.
I love that. Okay, Christopher, what is your rapid fire question?
What is your favorite type of spa service? So if you're going to relax, what are you going to go do?
I hate when people touch me.
Me too. Is that a thing?
What are you talking about? Like, we literally used to go get our nails done once a month. What are you talking about?
Oh, okay.
About?
Like that. I was thinking more like spa, like facial, massage. Like, I'm not about that life. So definitely not a massage. It stresses me out when people touch me. But I do like a good facial. I will say I do enjoy my pores getting extracted and all of the things.
Fancy lady. Japan changed you. I'm
just kidding. Whatever. What's your favorite service?
I don't know. I'm the same as you. I don't like anybody touching me at all. Let's see. A pedicure. We'll say a pedicure. I don't know. Is that my grandma doesn't like people touching her either. So did we learn that from them?
Yeah. It's cultural.
Maybe that's what it is.
Christopher, what's yours?
I love a good deep tissue massage. I also love a good paraffin wax treatment where they dip your hand or your feet in the hot wax. Oh, it's so soothing. I don't like facials. I got a facial one time and my face became like the worst for the next like 3 days. I was like, this is awful. Can't do this again. Terrible. So, you know, it has to be a deep tissue massage or it can be a paraffin wax treatment. But otherwise, I'm good. Yeah, I can keep it. The sweetest massages, you're just like touching me and breathing on me for an hour and I can't do it. Stop it.
I could have got that for cheaper somewhere else, friend.
Honestly. Well, Issa, first and foremost, on an episode with a topic as sensitive as this one, I want to thank you for your candidness and your openness, your flexibility, and just being a part of this experience. Because I think you for sure... But I think we definitely both had moments of just like, here are things that I've never said on the podcast, and it's been 4 seasons. And so I appreciate you for really encouraging me and pushing me to dig deep into those experiences.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me, and thank you for being vulnerable, too. I know it's not easy. So this was a lot of fun. I was super scared. I told Emma before I came on. I might have cried a little bit. Just kidding. But I had a really good time. Thank you guys.
I'm so excited for all of the responsibility to be on Emma the Ally because it's her job to make sure we feel safe. So love that for you, Emma.
That's what I'm here for. Don't fire my friend.
Where can people find the podcast?
You can find our podcast on Facebook and Instagram at The Tea with Crema. If you'd like to buy us a cup of tea or send some scholarship money over to my cousin Issa, you can also Venmo us at The Tea with Crema. If you'd like to stream our other episode on Mormonism, you can also catch that on all of your streaming platforms. We'll see you next time. Bye.